Welcome back to the Food Fight Podcast. I'm Matt Eastland.
And I'm Lakshmi Baldassan.
And we're both here from EIT Food, Europe's leading innovation community working hard to make the food system more healthy, sustainable and trusted. As we approach the end of 2020, and what a year it's been, Lakshmi and I have been keen to take the opportunity to look back at challenges the food system has faced and the ways it has responded.
Yes, and through COVID-19, we've learned a lot about resilience, about collaboration, and about dealing with the unexpected. It's also been a year of innovation after innovation and big shifts to the status quo, which will undoubtedly have a lasting impact. Well, after immunization plans of 2021 and a return to so-called normal life.
Indeed. So to reflect on what's changed and where we should place our efforts going forward, we're joined by two amazing guests. We have Klaus Grunert, professor at Aarhus University in Denmark and founder of the MAP Center for Research on Customer Relations in the Food Sector. And not to hype him up, but Klaus basically is an expert consumer scientist with over 80 industry projects, 12 books, and 200 academic papers to his name. And he's recently been leading a study on the effect of the COVID-19 pandemic on eating habits, which is why we're here. Thanks for joining us on the podcast, Klaus.
Thank you.
And we're also joined by Brij Sahi, the CEO and co-founder of Swiss Decode, a company that's focused on rapid DNA testing solutions to identify contaminants in food. And more on that in a second. Welcome back, Brij. It's your second time on the podcast.
Yes, it is. And it's great to be back. Thank you.
Great. Thanks both for being here with us. So before we focus in on the specific areas that you've been looking at, so on a broad level, what do you think have been the big tectonic changes that affected the food chain this year? And what didn't you see coming?
Well, the pandemic has been a disruptive event. It has changed the daily life for all of us, I think. And food is a part of daily life. So obviously, it also had an impact on the way we eat and what we buy. And I think that, of course, could be predicted when the pandemic started. It has affected the way people buy food and eat in some ways that were maybe a bit surprising. But I come back to that.
Absolutely. And what about you, Brij?
Well, we look at it from the food manufacturers and the farmers, from farm to fork. And first of all, the changes that took place in the factories, we realized immediately that food is one of the essential supply chains. And so a lot of governments focused on making sure that this supply chain was not broken and that people were able to get the food that they needed to consume. But then at the same time, we noticed within certain industries, such as the meat industry, for example, there was a very, very high prevalence of COVID-19 in the workforce. And then at the same time, generally, workers were not going to the office anymore. And so their eating habits changed as well. But more about this later.
And I guess to both of you, was there something surprising that has occurred now that you just didn't see would occur as a result of COVID-19 in the food system?
Well, I mean, some of the effects, if you start the other way around, some effects were sort of quite predictable. If you are forced to eat at home because restaurants and canteens are closed, that obviously has an effect on your meal patterns. There are limits on mobility and going out, you may start ordering a few things online. But apart from that, one of the things that really sort of was interesting for me is that there seems to be an effect that people enjoy cooking more, at least many people do, have spent more time in the kitchen, more time with their family eating. In a way, some people, it seems, have rediscovered the joy of food during the pandemic. And I think that was not necessarily expected.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Brij? Anything that surprised you?
A couple of things. In the first instance, companies are going to have to revisit their strategy for moving forward. If we take the example in the food industry of companies such as Coca-Cola, whose revenue went down significantly because nearly 30% of their sales were in exhibition centers, events, etc., which all closed down. And then you have companies like General Mills, who can't produce enough and their factories are running at over capacity because of what Klaus said earlier, people are staying at home, they're cooking at home, they need the staple diet, staple foods at home. And so I found that very interesting. But then what's also surprising me now is what's going to happen in the future? Because when we look at some of the customs issues, the regulatory framework, it hasn't been decided as to how COVID-19 will be treated in the future. If one listens to the news, one hears a lot about COVID-19 being discovered on frozen packaging. And most of this is coming out of China. But at this moment in time, there is no regulatory framework around the import-export of food, frozen or not, related to COVID-19. It should be interesting to see what pans out in the future.
And you raise a really interesting point there about food security in general, and maybe, you know, with something we've spoken about before about, you know, the resilience of the food system. You know, how has it made you feel about how resilient our food system is and how secure our food is in general?
Personally, I think it makes me feel very comfortable that our food system is secure. During the peaks of the crisis, and even today, where here in Switzerland we have more cases being announced than during the first lockdown. But people are trying to lead a normal life. The supermarket's shelves are full, and people can generally buy whatever they want to buy and consume it. That makes me feel good.
And what about you, Klaus? I mean, from where you are in Denmark, I mean, do you feel comfortable about the resilience of the food system?
I certainly do myself, and I think most people do. It's also what the research shows, that there have been limited effects because food has been available. Doesn't mean that there hasn't been some bulk buying. And there could be several explanations for that. People just minimizing the risk by not going out as often. But of course, it can also be that people sort of want to stock up on things just to be on the safe side. But by and large, I think it seems like the confidence in food security and the resilience of the food system was good.
No, that's great to hear.
So back to you, Britt. For those who didn't hear you on the podcast the first time around, so Swiss Decode, and if I remember correctly, it started with an idea after the horse meat scandal, right?
That's and correct. And
you progressed to groundbreaking, so rapid DNA testing for things like salmonella. And now, being startup stealth mode, you've pivoted in at your COVID-19.
Yes.
So give us a potted history of the company.
Sure. So if one remembers the horse meat scandal, the number one test that was performed to decide and define whether horse meat was present in the lasagnas and the meat dishes is a test that's performed in the laboratories called a PCR. So what we did is by taking some technology from various locations and a patent we applied for at University of Geneva, we actually turned that into a rapid on-site test. So we could test for horse meat and give a result in 30 minutes with no scientists, no lab equipment, no expensive laboratory reagents or anything like that. So
amazing.
30 minutes. So we took this test and we went out to the market and we started asking customers, where would you like to perform a rapid on-site test? And this is how we started generating our business, and we went from strength to strength. And one of our customers turned around and said, we have a big issue in the cocoa industry. There is a virus, it's called the cocoa swollen shoot virus, CSSV, and it's decimating the cocoa industry. I don't know if you know, but 70% of the cocoa comes from Ivory Coast and Ghana, and it supports 14 million families.
Wow.
So 10% of the crops are being destroyed every year because of this virus. So we created a test for this virus, and we're engaging with various stakeholders to implement the solution. But because we could create a test for a virus, when coronavirus came along, the first impact it had on us was that all our customers started to delay the projects that we were working on. We were not allowed to visit their factories, and they themselves were not allowed to go from, say, Switzerland to the Netherlands to help perform an implementation with us. So when everything started to come to a standstill, we looked at the coronavirus. Luckily for us, the whole sequence of the DNA sequence was already published, and we could then just take it, and we created a rapid on-site test for it.
That's incredible. I had no idea that you were already working on another virus, which then allowed you effectively to kind of move on to the COVID one as well. And is it is this test already kind of out there and available?
The COVID-19 test, so there are two parts to this. Okay, so the first part is we have a reaction that works. Okay, so we can use it wherever we want. However, one on the human diagnostic side, one needs something called CE-IVD, and we are working towards that. Mm-hmm. And we will have that fairly shortly. And then what we did is because we are focused on the food industry, and because I mentioned to you earlier that slaughterhouses were being closed down because of COVID-19, mm-hmm. we decided to create an environmental swab test for COVID-19. Mm-hmm. Right. So earlier I mentioned how imports into China are being checked for COVID-19 mm-hmm. and they're discovering it on the surface of the food or surface of the frozen food packaging. So what we're creating is a swab test where one can actually just test the surface area where the food is passing over and then get the result in about 30 minutes to confirm that COVID-19 is present or hopefully not present. And so then the food can be released as per the regulatory framework that's going to come out in the future.
Incredible.
That's really incredible.
Yeah, no, well done on that, Bridge. And, you know, all the best. You know, great to hear that these sorts of innovations are coming out. And then, Klaus, I mean, just sort of thinking more about consumers, I guess choices based around health and sustainability have obviously become an even bigger consideration for us as consumers this year through COVID. So can you tell us a bit about the Aarhus COVID-19 report that you've been leading and some of your great findings?
Yeah, we've been doing a consumer study in 10 different countries where we asked people about how the COVID-19 pandemic has affected their food-related behaviors. Both their shopping, their cooking, the way they eat meals, and also asking them whether they think these changes would be sort of more permanent or would disappear again when we get over the pandemic. And as I already said, some results were not so surprising. We find that people buy more online. We find that people buy in larger quantities and not as often as before. We also find changes in what people buy and the criteria that they use. They increase certain product categories more than others. Everything has been going sort of up because people eat more at home, obviously. But in addition to that, we find that especially fruits and vegetables has been going up, indicating that there may be a trend towards some more healthy eating. Flour has been going up, indicating baking. Herbs and spices has been going up, indicating that people do more meals from scratch. But for some consumers also, like crisps and snacks and chocolates and things like that have been going up, which is sort of a way of compensating the stress you may feel.
I'm one of those.
When we ask people about the criteria that they use, we find that they seem to be more deliberate in their choices. You find that people say they buy less on impulse, they buy more looking at prices, looking at dates, looking at the type of packaging, naturalness, use of additives, basically looking more at things that are part of a sort of green topic, you know, that people are more into sustainability and more on healthiness of the foods that they buy and prepare. And that, of course, is not a new trend. We had that trend ongoing already before the pandemic started. But it looks like as if the pandemic may have had an accelerating effect with more people becoming aware of that and it having an impact on the food choices they make. In addition to that, as I already said, we also find that people say they spend more time in the kitchen, they mm-hmm. are more creative with regard to what they are doing, and they have more regular meals together with their family, and think that the social aspect of eating is becoming more important. We should also say that it's not the whole picture. We also find a few people were actually use of convenience foods, ready meals, and so on has been going up during the pandemic. We have that group as well, but it's a smaller group.
Okay, so that's interesting. So just from what you said, it sounds like a lot of these trends are actually positive in respect to the food system, or is that the broad trend, or are there, you know, more sort of negative trends as well in there?
Well, we have three groups. We have a group where they have relatively small changes. We have a group where changes go towards a more sort of deliberate approach to what you eat, more mindfulness if you want. And then we have a smaller group which goes in the opposite direction, where we have more snacking, where we have more ready meals and so on. But if you add the whole thing up, my conclusion is that the overall change goes into a positive direction if you look at it from the perspective of the transition towards a healthy and sustainable food system.
Oh, that's really good. And I guess the killer question then is, do you think the changes are going to last?
Well, of course, we don't know. Mm-hmm. We have been asking people about their own opinion, whether they think it will last or not. We've been asking which goals for the food-related behaviors will become more important in the future. And the results there look like that people think these changes towards more health-oriented and sustainability-oriented behavior are likely to last, whereas the other changes towards more ready meals and more snacks are less likely to last. So the overall conclusion, at least if you base it on people's sort of own perception or their own prediction on the future development, would be that the green health trend will last more than the opposite trend.
Bridge, okay. I see you shaking your head to some of what Klaus is saying. As a consumer yourself, like, do any of these points resonate with you?
100%. Firstly, from a personal perspective, I'm in a family of six, and we all take turns to cook. Mm-hmm. And this came about because of the first lockdown that we had. And even my youngest at the age of 14 has to cook a meal for the family of six. So very positive impact. From a work perspective, we had the first lockdown when nobody was going into the office except for people from our laboratory. Mm-hmm. And subsequently, when the lockdown started to ease up, we said that, okay, you go in if you want to go in, because we found a lot of people working from home were sitting down at 9 o'clock in the morning and not moving until 5, 6 in the evening. And there was a complete lack of exercise. So, and also the social interactions. So the impact on the work environment is, I think that it will stay now, that it will last. We are now looking for a new office and a new laboratory, and we are factoring in that people will not come to the office as often as they used to, except for mm-hmm. those working in the lab. And this is quite big impact. Mm-hmm. And then in terms of food, I always say that there's positives and negatives. The positive social ones, like the one I mentioned earlier about eating together in the evenings, having dinner together. But then to see that the snacking increases, and on top of that, you're sitting in your seats the whole day. It's not a good sign. It's really not a good sign. But generally, I think that the changes that have taken place will be here. They will stick now.
No. And I guess kind of coming back to you in terms of, you know, your industry in food safety, what can we kind of expect in terms of us thinking about the quality and safety of our food?
Well, the first thing that the consumers generally should pick up on is that the entire industry is now so much more aware of food safety. The awareness, because of COVID-19, within the executive teams of all the major food players is very, very high. It's a lot easier to have a conversation about food safety today than it was in the past. It was easy relatively in the past, but now it has priority. So generally, what the executives are thinking about is not only what we're going to do with COVID-19, it's what we're going to do with COVID-20. And they need to start preparing themselves for the future. As if we were to have another lockdown for another any reason at all, what is going to happen? From our perspective, we, of course, COVID-19 is one virus, and there's still a debate as to whether it can, how long it will survive on food surfaces, on packaged surfaces, on metal surfaces in the industrial production areas. That debate will continue. But the debate around the Salmonella, the Listeria, Campylobacter, that will become more acute, I think, in the future. And there is a general trend in the industry today towards rapid on-site testing. And there are many big players starting to come into this business as well. All of this is leading towards one thing, which is results a lot quicker than they would normally be received from the lab. And then they can make decisions quicker with those results as well. And as the tests that are being positioned out there in the factories are also becoming more reliable, then the decisions that they can make can be more trusted as well. So this is a trend that we're seeing now in the food industry.
That's interesting.
It sounds like this has actually sort of accelerated the innovation aspect too, for what the industry is looking for and what you're probably doing internally too, really speeding up what you can offer.
Yeah. The holy grail. Let me describe the holy grail for innovation in terms of food safety. The law today states that there should be zero salmonella, listeria, whatever, in 25 grams of food. There is no technology today that can identify one colon CFU in 25 grams. There is no technology that exists today. So the innovation comes to try and get to that one CFU in 25 grams. How can we identify it? And there's a whole load of innovation around this subject, and we haven't got to the holy grail yet.
So watch this space.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're all trying.
can we go from sort of talking about the innovations, but talking more broadly? Because, I mean, the food industry itself is obviously huge and the food chain is very long. But so do you think, which players in the food system do you think have been the most or least affected by the impact of COVID? And how is that impact looking going forward? So, I mean, Klaus, I know that you're a specialist on the consumer side. Do you think that the consumers have been most affected by this? Are they the ones who've had to bear the brunt of everything that's happened with COVID?
Well, those that have been most affected are obviously those in the food service business. Well, their businesses have been closed down for periods, and even when it opened up, their business has been restricted in all kinds of ways. They have clearly been the ones who have been affected most, and we don't know yet what that will mean for people's patterns of eating in the future, because we may, of course, be in a situation when people rediscover the joy of eating at home, that it has a more permanent effect on the food service businesses. We don't know that. Now, some of these long-term effects are still unknown for us. I also believe it will have, I do believe it will have a long-term effect on sales channels, because we have seen this rise in online buying of food, which has always been a bit slow in developing compared to many other industries. For a number of reasons, logistics and manpower and so on. But more people have been doing that, and it may accelerate a development where we have more multiple channels and more alternative channels for food distribution compared to what we have today. And retail businesses will have to adapt to that. As for our farming and manufacturing, I think the effects are more long-term. But if the trends I described earlier are trends that will stay and will maybe even accelerate, it only underlines the challenges that the whole food sector has in terms of the green transition.
Yeah, thanks, Klaus. And Bridge, do you agree? I mean, from your position kind of on the ground, seeing these things happen in the industry, do you agree with what Klaus says?
Yes, I do. And if I can just add to that, I think when the food industry was declared as an emergency essential service, the governments took notice and did what they had to do. I give you the example of food, generally plants that were that needed to be picked. So we're talking about, say, the strawberries and the fruits that needed to be picked in a country such as the UK, which relies upon a workforce that comes from outside of the UK for a certain period of time. And when the travel was banned between countries, these workers were considered to be essential workers, and they were allowed to travel to pick the necessary fruits and berries or whatever was needed to be done. And that showed to me that governments can act when they need to, when there is a crisis affecting the food industry. So I think that this will continue in the future as well.
Yeah.
Do you think the COVID crisis kind of maybe offers the food industry an opportunity maybe to build back better. So, you know, taking those trends and actually accelerating them and strengthening the, you know, the positives that have come out of this.
Certainly, yes, from an innovation perspective. I mean, there is now a lot more innovation being done into the automation of fruit picking, for example, and also the use of drones to check on the health of the fields rather than having people walking around them. So I think, yes, build back better is certainly the way to go. And I think the food industry is responding to that as well.
And I guess, you know, very interested to hear from you, Klaus, in terms of the consumer researcher. What opportunities do you see in consumers are embracing?
Well, I think from a sort of behavioral change perspective, which is what we're talking a lot about in terms of the green transition, people need to change their habits and all that. All the research on habit formation and habit breaking says habits is something that thrives in stable environments. If the environment changes suddenly, then habits also may break down and people may form new habits or change their behavior. And the COVID-19 pandemic obviously has been a disruptive event. It has changed, as I said in the beginning, the life of many people, the daily life, so simple things like where you work and how you buy things and how you prepare meals and how you eat. So in that sense, it can have a catalytic effect with regard to changes also in consumer behavior. And I think it's important for the whole food sector, including the whole food chain, that we also sort of help consumers in forming new habits in terms of a healthier and more sustainable food-related lifestyle.
And what do you think, Klaus, in terms of what could the food industry either have done better or should do better going forwards to help consumers?
Yeah, I mean, the food industry is in the process. I think the food industry is moving in the right direction. But just two things. One is the development of products that are healthier and or more sustainable alternatives to what we buy today. And the other thing, and there here we also have a regulatory aspect, is the provision of information that allows consumers actually to make the healthier and more sustainable choices. And it's a topic that is addressed. It's part of the Farm to Fork program of the EU, where sustainability labeling is written in. It's these type of measures that I think that the food sector will need to address.
Good to hear. What do you think? What do you think, Bridge? What could the industry have done better or should do better?
Well, I'm going to reflect on what Klaus just said, because what we're offering is essentially a way of doing the traceability that the consumers are looking for. So we see a lot of blockchain initiatives coming through. All the big players are involved in blockchain initiatives, especially one led by IBM. But what we always say is that with blockchain, one can trace the carton, the packaging, to the source. But what one cannot do is to look at the content and trace back the content. And so with our solution for DNA testing, with something that we're going to roll out next year, which we call Beam It Up, one will be able to test the content of a product of through the DNA and get a rapid on-site result within 30 minutes without the sample having to go to the lab. And because this is a cloud solution that we are creating, the data will be stored and then made available to whoever needs to see that data. So, for example, to me, if there's a person with an allergy and we are providing an allergen test from anywhere from the farm to the fork, then the person, the consumer, can actually scan the barcode on the packaging, be able to do the traceability through the blockchain systems that may be in place, but also they'll be able to say that the content was tested for whichever allergy they have at all these various steps along the way. And that gives them the confidence that they're really looking for to be able to consume what's on the plate in front of them and not have to worry.
So that's incredible. Yeah, when you're first speaking, I was thinking, oh, this would be great for industry. But now that you're talking about this is going to be available for the consumer, that is going to be a big change.
Absolutely. This data should be available to whoever needs to see the data, to make them, and from a consumer perspective, it's all about lifting the confidence level. And that's what we're trying to do.
Fabulous. Fabulous. So let's just talk about going forwards then. So What do you think the outlook is for the agri-food sector going into 2021, or you know, maybe over the next 12 to 18 months? I mean, we've spoken about building back better, and I think there's some positives there, but obviously the food system has also been quite shocked by everything that's happened this year. Going forward, do you think that the agri-food sector is going to be in a much better place for, going through COVID? Klaus, what do you think?
Well, it's a much better. Well, that depends on the eyes that you're looking at, assume, right? But I mean, there is a chance that the agri-food sector, from the perspective of the green transition, actually will be a better place. Yes. Once we get through all this and get going, and then if we find that some of these trends will stabilize, and if the food industry and the regulators do what is needed in order to further enforce them, then I think we can look back and in spite of all sort of the pain that the pandemic has created here, that there maybe there is one aspect where it also had had some positive effect.
Great. Yeah, and what about you, Bridge? Is there light at the end of the tunnel for you here?
Absolutely. I think that one has to look at the different business segments within the food industry. So I think in the farm sector, yes, they will have to use innovation to better bring the food from the farm into the production areas towards the fork. But then when one looks at the service industry, which Klaus mentioned earlier, I think that's probably forever changed. And there are so many businesses that will just go bust and they will probably never come back.
Yeah, tragic.
Absolutely. And then I think in terms of health versus not so healthy foods, I think that those changes will be pretty permanent as well. And I mentioned at the beginning that some businesses will need to review their strategy, because companies like Coca-Cola, whose revenue has gone down so much because of COVID-19, they will need to find a replacement revenue source for that. So I think that there will perhaps be some more consolidation at the corporate level. And then from the consumer level, as to how they consume their food and the last mile of delivery, whether it's from the restaurant being delivered by Uber Eats or whoever, or whether it's ordering from the supermarket online and having everything delivered to your front door. And also, you now have these companies that are doing pretty well in delivering ingredients that you can cook at home. And it's not without reason that Nestle paid over $1 billion for such a company in the US a couple of weeks ago, because they know that that is one of the future trends. It's it's a mixture of convenience, a mixture of nutrition, and it's a mixture of having the right thing at the time they need it. So I think this is also a trend that's here to stay.
That's really interesting. I'm really curious to see what next year and the year after that's going to look like, with what path we sort of take as the industry and consumers as we evolve from the current challenges. If there's one thing that you hope either the industry or us, the consumer, takes away and really learns from the crisis, just the one thing, what do you think it'd be, Klaus?
It's the joy of good food.
Hey.
It's the joy of good food and the way in which good food contributes to a good life, even in a situation of crisis.
That's lovely.
I love that, yeah.
That's a nice positive note. And what about you, Bridge? I know you've just talked about lots of great ideas, but one thing you think the industry take away and learns from the crisis, what would it be?
So I have a saying, okay, which is never ever stop learning, growing, and building something. So I would say to the industry, learn from what's happened during this COVID-19. Just learn from it. Change as you need to and build something new as required.
Ah, that's perfect. Thanks for that. And Klaus, so where can people learn more about your work, your perspectives, a little bit more about where they can read about the report?
We'll present some of the results at the Future Food Conference next week. And the report will come out at the same time and will be widely available.
Perfect. Thanks so much. And what about you, Bridge? Where can people find out more about your work and your perspectives?
Well, the easiest is to visit our website, which is swissdecode.com. We have our solutions on the website, though we don't have our future developments. And so if you want to learn a little bit more, just send an email to info@swissdecode.com and I will respond.
Perfect. Thanks very much.
Amazing. Thank you both so much for your time today. Another fascinating conversation. And it's great that as we've gone through this, we've all picked up on all the positives and we've ended on a really high note. So thank you very much for that. So Klaus, thank you very much to you.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
And Bridge, thank you to yourself as well.
Matt, thank you so much. Lakshmi, thank you. And I look forward to the third time.
Perfect. Great.
Yes, us too. So that has been the Food Fight podcast from EIT Food. If you'd like to learn more about what we're doing, then check us out on eitfood.eu/podcast, or also check us out on Twitter @EIT Food. Thanks for listening, everybody.